Camille Saint-Saëns was born in Paris in 1835. His father died shortly after he was born, and an aunt soon moved in to help his mother. When he was two, his aunt began to give him piano lessons, and she quickly discovered that he had perfect pitch. However, that was not all that she and his mother discovered. Little Camille was both reading and writing by the age of three, and by four, he had written his first musical composition. You can actually see the manuscript at the Bibliothèque Nationale in Paris. He began formal piano lessons at the age of seven, and soon gave his first public performance, playing the piano accompaniment to a Beethoven violin sonata. Not easy music. When he was 10, he gave a recital at the famous Salle Pleyel in Paris. At the end of the recital, he turned to the audience in this huge concert hall and said, in French of course, "I can play all 32 Beethoven piano sonatas from memory, so pick any one and I will play it for you." Needless to say, word quickly spread that there was a young musical genius in Paris. Saint-Saëns was admitted to the Paris Conservatory in his early teens. There he studied both organ and composition. At 16, he composed not his first, but his second symphony. When the famous composer Hector Berlioz heard it, he simply commented, "He knows everything, he just lacks experience." But like most composers, Saint-Saëns needed a day job. So he became a church organist, and by the age of 22, he had become the organist in one of the most famous churches in Paris, La Madeleine. Saint-Saëns was indeed a genius, for his brilliance was not confined to music. In addition to composing, performing, and writing musical criticism, he found time to be extremely well-versed in geology, archaeology, botany, lepidoptery, the study of butterflies, and mathematics. He wrote articles on acoustics, Roman theater decoration, and early instruments. He also gave lectures on the nature of mirages and had a telescope made to his own specifications. Saint-Saëns was good friends with the most famous musicians of his day, the great pianist and composer Franz Liszt, as well as composers like Fauré, Berlioz, Wagner, and Rossini. Many came to the church of La Madeleine to hear his improvisations on the organ, and, not surprisingly, he was called the greatest organist of his time. But beyond all that, it was when he sat down and sight-read the full orchestral scores of Wagner's great and complex operas, Siegfried, Lohengrin, Tristan and Isolde, that the great conductor Hans von Bülow went a step further, declaring, "Saint-Saëns is the greatest musical mind of our era." Despite all of his professional success, Saint-Saëns had a very unhappy personal life. He had a short, disastrous marriage, and his two young children died within 6 weeks of each other, one falling out of a fourth-floor window. Nevertheless, life did move on. As he traveled widely, his musical reputation spread throughout Europe. He was always very popular in England, and he traveled as far west as San Francisco, where he conducted the San Francisco Symphony. During his later years, he moved to Algiers, where, in 1921, at the end of a very long and productive life, he died at the age of 86. Saint-Saëns composed over 300 works in every possible musical genre: symphonies, operas, concertos, sonatas. He was the first serious composer to write music for silent movies and was also the earliest born composer to have his music recorded. Ironically, Saint-Saëns today is best known for The Carnival of the Animals, the single work that he refused to allow to be performed publicly or even published during his lifetime. Saint-Saëns was afraid that if people knew that he had written this very funny piece of music, they would no longer think of him as a serious composer. Instead, contrary to all his fears, the world understood the brilliance of this work, and it remains to this day his most famous composition.
Camille Saint-Saëns was racked with pains when people addressed him as Saint Saëns. He held the human race to blame because it could not pronounce his name. So he turned with metronome and fife to glorify other forms of life. Be quiet, please, for here begins his salute to feathers, furs, and fins. The lion is the king of beasts and husband of the lioness. Gazelles and things on which he feasts address him as Your Highness. There are those who admire that roar of his in the African jungles and velds, but I think wherever the lion is, I'd rather be somewhere else. The rooster is a roistering hoodlum. His battle cry is cock-a-doodle-um. Hands in pockets, cap over eye, he whistles at pullets passing by. Have you ever harked to the Jackass Wild, which scientists call the onager? It sounds like the laugh of a mischievous child or a hep cat on a harmoniger. But do not sneer at the Jackass Wild. There is method in his hee-haw. For with maidenly blush and accent mild, the Jenny-ass answers she-haw. Come crown my brow with leaves of myrtle. I know the tortoise is a turtle. Come carve my name in stone immortal. I know the tortoise is a tortle. I know to my profound despair I bet on one to beat a hare. I also know I'm now a pauper because of its tortly, turtly torpor. Elephants are useful friends, equipped with handles at both ends. They have a wrinkled, moth-proof hide. Their teeth are upside down, outside. If you think the elephant preposterous, you've probably never seen a rhinoceros. The kangaroo can jump incredible. He has to jump because he's edible. I could not eat a kangaroo, but many fine Australians do. Those with cookbooks as well as boomerangs prefer him in tasty kangaroo meringues. Thank you. Some fish are minnows, some are whales. People like dimples, fish like scales. Some fish are slim, and some are round. They don't get cold, they don't get drowned. But every fishwife is jealous for her fish of what we call mermaids, and they call merfish. In the world of mules, there are no rules. Cuckoos lead bohemian lives. They fail as husbands and as wives. Therefore, they cynically disparage everybody else's marriage. Puccini was Latin, and Wagner Teutonic, and birds are incurably philharmonic. Suburban yards and rural vistas are filled with avian Andrews sisters. The skylark sings a rondelay. The crow sings the road to Mandalay. The nightingale sings a lullaby, and the seagull sings a gullaby. That's what shepherds listened to in Arcadia before somebody invented the radio. Some claim that pianists are human, and quote the case of Mr. Truman. Saint-Saëns, upon the other hand, considered them a scurvy band. Ape-like they are, he said, and simian, instead of normal men and women. At midnight in the museum hall, the fossils gathered for a ball. There were no drums or saxophones, but just the clatter of their bones. A rolling, rattling, carefree circus of mammoth polkas and mazurkas. Pterodactyls and brontosauruses sang ghostly prehistoric choruses. Amid the mastodonic wassail, I caught the eye of one small fossil. Cheer up, sad world, he said and winked. It's kind of fun to be extinct. Thank you. the swan can swim while sitting down. For pure conceit, she takes the crown. She looks in the mirror over and over and claims never to have heard of Pavlova. Now we've reached the grand finale, Animale Carnivale. Noises new to sea and land issue from the skillful band. All the strings contort their features, imitating crawly creatures. All the brasses look like mumps from blowing oompa, oompa, umps. In outdoing Barnum and Bailey and Ringling, Saint-Saëns has done a miraculous thingling. Thank you.